Tene tama tante la gondra traji bhuli dan shakti. Kunzo sanjuk sen dan danda sanjuk sen gongyong gongyong dhirvana.
So Rinpoche wishes everyone the kashi delay this evening and also makes the aspiration that our relative bodhicitta and our ultimate bodhicitta, the mind of enlightenment, will increase and increase. So as before, Rinpoche requests that we give rise to bodhicitta, the mind of enlightenment, for the benefit of all sentient beings, as is the practice in the Mahayana. So now Rinpoche will explain a text by Jamgon Kontro Lodu Taye that explains the Dharma very well in stages very clearly, and it's called Creation and Completion, Essential Points of Tantric Meditation. So Rinpoche says this is a very, is quite a long text, and we only have one session in which we can meet, and Rinpoche can teach us this, so he will teach us the most important parts of it. So the part that Rinpoche will first discuss can be found starting at the bottom of page 32, if anybody has this book and wants to follow it. But I'll read it out, and it says, all phenomena are subsumed under the two truths. The relative truth is true with respect to delusion, and the absolute truth is true with respect to true nature. The definition of truth is that it is without deception. If you know that the two truths are inseparable, like the moon and the water, then the extinction of deluded appearance is close at hand.
Namba sanje belola tikpa chichong de chu tamte denba ni ji de bare denba ni ji na na mande te chu me bare ti se na chu na tamte denba ni ji de so.
So the first part says all phenomena are subsumed under the two truths. In all of the schools of Buddhism, whether they be the lesser or the greater vehicles, all of them explain the way that phenomena are according to these two truths. There's nothing that exists outside of these two truths. So that's why it says that all phenomena are contained or covered or subsumed by these two truths. So, how is the relative truth true? In what way is it true? And it's true with respect to delusion. It's true with respect to not understanding or not recognizing the dream. When we don't recognize the dream, then we take different things that appear to us to be actually true, to be truly existent. And so from that perspective, or describing that situation, the relative truth is true, but only with respect to that. So, in this life, there are many things that appear to us, and they appear to us as something real. And then we grasp onto them as being real. And then they can act in certain ways. And so, the relative truth describes that. It describes what's happening in that situation. Additionally, Rinpoche says that in this life we have the appearances of lots of suffering and lots of hard circumstances. And the mind that takes those things to be true is also the confused mind. And the relative truth is what holds for that situation. And so then we get to the ultimate truth, or the absolute truth, and the absolute truth is true with respect to the true nature. It's true with respect to the way how things actually are. And so the ultimate or the absolute truth is not something that is true with respect to the thinking consciousness or the conceptualizing consciousness. It's only true with respect to the awareness, the primordial awareness, which is beyond any conceptual activity at all. So then it says, what is the definition of truth? What does truth mean? Relative truth and absolute truth, but what is truth? And truth is something which is not deceiving, which is without any deception or any mistake. So an example of this Rinpoche puts in the form of a reasoning, and he says, given the relative, it is true because it describes what happens with regard to the confused mind.
So
So, for example, if we start out having a confused mind, then lots of different things can happen. We can have happiness or suffering. We can have be burned by fire, or we can be drowned in water. We can have good things happen that help us. We can have bad circumstances happen that hurt us. But all of these things we take to be true, and they actually do happen from the perspective of the confused mind. It's not like they don't happen. They do happen for the confused mind. So therefore, it's called the relative truth. And so then, if we take emptiness as the subject, it is in fact true because of two reasons. First, it is the true mode, it is the actual way that things are. And second, because it is the object of experience of the noble Aryas who have attained realization. So, given the example of the dream, if we don't recognize that we're dreaming, then we take all of these different things to be true. They really do appear to us as being something truly existent. And so that's like the relative truth. It's like the relative truth in the sense that for the confused mind, these things are true. And then the ultimate truth is like if we realize the dream, if we recognize that we're dreaming and that all of these objects are just the creation of our own minds and don't truly exist, then that is like the ultimate truth. So then it says, if you know that the two truths are inseparable, like the moon and the water, then the extinction of deluded appearance is close at hand. So the relative truth is true for the perspective of, or for the confused mind, and the ultimate truth is true for the mind of the Aryas, or the ones who have attained realization. But in reality, these two things, in the true nature, these two truths are inseparable. And Jamgon Kontro Lodutai, in a different text, said that what he said was about the two truths was, he said, one nature and different sides. So if you look at it from different sides with the relative mind, then you see two truths. But these are only separated by our concepts. Ultimately, they only have one nature. They are, in fact, inseparable. And the example for this is like the moon and the water. We see the reflection of the moon in the water, and it looks like a real moon. I mean, it looks like the moon. But we know that it doesn't truly exist. It's not something real. In fact, it's empty. It has no true nature. It has no atoms. Like, there's nothing that you can touch there or that's solid in any way that would be like a real moon. It's just not real. And so this knowledge that of these two truths inseparable in this way, when we have that knowledge, then what happens is that very soon we will cease to be confused by our conceptualizing mind. Once we know that the two truths are in fact inseparable, then the ceasing of conceptualizing mind confusing us is close at hand. So Rinpoche says that in all the explanations from the Shravaka and the Pracheka Buddha vehicle all the way up to the Vajrayana vehicle, the explanation of how all phenomena are said to exist is given in terms of these two truths. And the two truths are inseparable. They're in essence of the same nature. The dividing of phenomena into two truths is just the activity of conceptualizing mind. So Rinpoche says that it's good if we can connect these up with the different schools and see how the different schools actually describe the two truths. So the different schools consist of first the school of the Shravakas and the Pracheka Buddhas, or of the first turning of the wheel of Dharma, and the two philosophical schools are called the Vaibhashika and the Sautrantika. And then when we get to the middle turning of the wheel of Dharma, when we get to the Mahayana, then the first school is the Chittamatra, or the mind only school. And then the next two schools comprise the Madhyamika, or the middle way school, and they are the Svatantrika Madhyamika and the Prasangika Madhyamika. And then finally there is the Shentong Madhyamika. And the Svatantrika and the Prasangika are called the empty of other Madhyamika schools, and the Shentong is called the empty of self Madhyamika.
Chom dang san na ten zin dorong dang mundor rang mi chi jin kun zo te chami tun da den ba sem ne lo sung ba te jam gu lo den thay ki ki zang zu le den yi jin na jia ka.
So all of these, what Rinpoche is about to teach about how these different schools describe the two truths is all from the Treasury of Knowledge, also by Jamgon Kongtro Lodu Taye. And when he describes the two truths in terms of the very first school of the first turning of the wheel of Dharma, which is the Vaibhashika, he said, when destroyed or analyzed, apprehension as that would be discarded or not discarded. Coarse things and durations of consciousness are relative truths. This is the important part. Coarse things and durations of consciousness are relative truths. The partless are ultimate truths. That is the Vaibhashika system. So then Rinpoche explains what this verse means, which first there's the root verse and then there's commentary to that. And so how do the Vaibhashika treat the two truths? Well, anything that can be, when something is destroyed or analyzed, so destroyed means like if you took a hammer and you mashed something, or if you dropped a bomb on it, okay? Rinpoche says, then that's destroying something. The other way is through analysis. When you look at something with your highest intelligence, and so those are the two things that are happening: either destruction, like physical destruction, or mentally looking at something. Okay, so when we do one of those two things, then there's two possibilities. The first thing is that something could actually be broken up into parts by a bomb or by a hammer or by our intelligence. Like we don't need to take a hammer to this to know that we can divide it up into parts. Okay, so we can do that with our own intelligence. So that's what it's saying. And if something can be broken up into parts, if something can be discarded, then it's said to be a relative truth. It's not something truly existent because it can be broken up into parts. If it can't be broken up into parts, even if you drop a bomb on it, if it can't be broken up into parts, then that's an ultimate truth. And so then we find out, okay, well, what are these things which constitute these two? And so the first one is coarse things and durations of consciousness. Coarse things being things which are made up of different particles, like this. Okay, this can, or a house, or a vase, or whatever it might be. Something that you can see around you. It's obviously divisible up into parts. Okay, so that's just a relative truth because it doesn't truly exist. It's just made up of parts. And then durations of consciousness, like our continuum of consciousness from the time we were a child until the time we die, divisible into many, many parts. Okay? So that is, again, a relative truth. It doesn't truly exist because it's just parts. Now, the Vaibhashika say that even though there are these things, There are also what they call partless particles, which the Vaibhashika assert that there are partless particles, which are particles of matter, which can't be divided. They are so subtle that even if you dropped a bomb on it, it wouldn't break up into different parts. And similarly, there are partless durations of consciousness. A duration of consciousness, or a moment, which is so small that you can't cut it up anymore, you can't divide it anymore. So these two things, according to the Vaibhashika school, are ultimately existent. Everything else is relatively existent. So, Rinpoche says, to sum it all up, we should just know that the Vaibhashikas posit as ultimate truths, first, these partless particles, which have no direction, like you can't say this is the top, this is the bottom, and all of these different things, because if you could, then you can divide it up. You could say there's a top part, a bottom part, a western part, and an eastern part. But you can't, because these things don't have any parts. So they can't really be seen either. They're just, but they exist. And then similarly, there are partless moments of consciousness which don't have a beginning and don't have an end. They are, but they, because of that, they can't be divided, and so they are truly existent. So these two things are ultimate truths according to the Vaibhashika. And so then comes the next school, which is the Sautrantika. And the Sautrantika say that phenomena ultimately able or not able to perform their function, having their own or general characteristics, is the Sautrantika system. So, how this works is, so it says phenomena, first let's take the ultimate truth, which they describe as phenomena able to perform a function. Okay, that's basically just what it sounds like. It's something that can do something. Okay? Like this lamp can give off light. It's able to perform that function. Or a vase can hold water. It's able to perform a function. Now, what isn't able to perform a function is our thought. Okay, the object of our thought. When we think lamp, okay, that thought, the object of that thought, lamp, that can't do anything. Or when we think vase, okay, that vase that's in our mind, that can't do anything. So that's just a relative truth. So if it has specific characteristics, like this, has a specific characteristics, meaning it's completely special, if there's only one of it in the whole world, in the whole universe that's like this. There's nothing else that's exactly the same. And so that is an ultimate truth. And what has general characteristics, meaning our thought, like when we think lamp, that covers every lamp. You know, that covers everything, like this. And so that is called a generally characterized phenomena, and that's just a relative truth. Doesn't truly exist.
Okay. king mandaba na so tin din ha ko
tin din re re ha ko
tin din je me la so ba me mandaba se da so so mu so mu so tya yo ba
re
tin to ba se da ba ran tin de so mu bo de so o ran tin re
sitra yo ba se na
ha sa ba se no ba
ja re re
tin din je me de chu pe me la so ba me se da ba
Say to Kido.
Sit to window.
Re.
Me see a person.
Re.
On board the Tetova.
Lassa.
De Ransin.
Re.
Jinzin said the current. Namdok and one like that. Namdok and me, Samba Capso. Dinny. Me, my imbale, Lota. Namdok was a kid carrier. Taking things. Namdok was a carrier. Me, taking things.
Lassa.
Namdol and Deb. Sagging sympathy. Ransin.
So, Rinpoche gives the example of fire. So, if we look at fire, he says, it's very important to understand the difference between specifically characterized phenomena and generally characterized phenomena. So he says, let's look at fire. Let's take like a sandalwood fire. Okay? If sandalwood is burning there, you can really feel it. Like, you can put your hand up to it and you can feel it. You can feel the heat of that fire. It's something that is really there. Okay? But then we have in our mind a thought that arises. Fire. We think, oh, this is fire. Okay? So there's two things. There's this real fire down here, but then that's not the same thing as we're thinking fire. That thought of fire can't do anything. It's just the object of our mind. And the truly existent fire is actually beyond any thought. It's completely non-conceptual. So that's the difference.
Then the word, then it just in the Jintin say that the may mean than the may keep a mean than the way may not by carry the then it may just in the day Tabo Yomare, sick to the mother.
What is the generally characterized phenomena? The generally characterized phenomena is just a name. It's just the thought of fire in our head. It really can't burn anything. It isn't hot at all. So it's just the object of our thought. That's all it is.
Main yipote deva yomare main te main dabe yedang wo che kwa yin na main yi tanyi yu du ka se gu ka se gu mendo tanyi de ka ni la wendo ka se gu mendo tanyi cha yi su pa tan mene deva yin
so Nagarjuna said that if there were really any connection between the name fire and the actual fire, then when we said the name fire, our tongues would burn. When we said that word. But we know that there's really no connection. There's this real object there that's burning, and then there's this thought and this name to which we give this name of fire. They're different things.
Me tak main dagi tak yu sepa de de sik ngre
pena
tundo chok me main ha ko ma re me na me sik tung sang ma re ina yan sik do re ko ra ra sin de de sik do
so there's no connection between this name fire and the actual fire, and that's proven because even if it has the name or if it doesn't have the name, it's still going to burn. Like an animal has no idea of like some calling something fire, but if he runs into a fire, it's still going to burn him. So there's no connection between those two. It's just imputed.
Dinan dote belo la ranti te ranti la ming yo mare thani yo mare thik yo mare ranti je ngo la kinti je trama yo mare.
Basa.
Kinti yo mare ranti
la
kinti je trama yo mare.
Basa. So. According to the Sautrantikas, in the specifically characterized object, there's no name, there's no convention, conventional expression describing it. There's no thought. It's completely beyond all of those things. So another example is of a child. When a child eats something, a little baby eats something sweet, there's that experience of sweetness in the mouth, even though the child doesn't think to describe it in any way, like a little baby. It just tastes, there's this experience of sweetness, but there's no thought of like calling it anything. And so in this specifically characterized object, is there's no name. It's beyond any type of expression in terms of its existence. We impute some connection to it with a name, but really it's completely beyond any type of name or thought about what it might be. So, if a child has a sweet piece of candy in its mouth, it definitely has that experience of sweetness, there's no doubt about it, even though it doesn't connect that at all with any name or any conventional expression or anything like that. So, what is this generally characterized phenomena? The generally characterized phenomena is what is the object of our thinking process. So, it is that name. It's just merely a name. It's nothing else. And once we start giving things names, then we can think of billions of different names. You know, there's no end to the number of names that we could give to something. But that's all that it is. It's just the object of our thoughts. It arises because of our thoughts. And it exists only in our mind. But it's not connected at all with the actual specifically characterized phenomena. So within the Sautrantika themselves, this one school, there are many different divisions. But Rinpoche says the most important thing for us to understand is their distinguishing between the specifically characterized and the generally characterized phenomena. That is the essence of what they're all about. So in the mind only school, the first Mahayana school, the root text says positing relative truths as apprehended and apprehender, dualistic appearance, object and beholder of the object, and ultimate truths as non-dual consciousness, is the Chittamatra system, or the mind-only system. So, Rinpoche explains this a little bit, and what it means is that when we have something perceived, when we have something perceived as being outside, that's the object, and that which perceives it to be outside is the subject or the beholder of the object. So, when we take those things to be true, when those things exist, then that's the relative. And the ultimate is empty of any subject-object duality. So the everything that is the relative truth is everything where there is some, there is the thought of there being an outer object and an inner perceiving subject. And the emptiness of that is the ultimate truth. So Rinpoche puts that in the form of a reasoning, and he says, given the mind-only school as the subject, they do explain things in terms of the two truths, because the relative truth is when there's a grasping onto an outer object and an inner subject, and the ultimate truth is the emptiness of duality of subject and object. So then we get to the first Madhyamika school of the Svatantrika, and it says, appearances are established relatively. They are like illusions. Ultimately, they are not established. They are similar to space. That's the Svatantrika system. So everything that appears, all appearances are just like illusions. They are of the nature of being like illusions, and so that is what is the what that is what is relatively existent. And so the ultimate truth in the Svatantrika is, in fact, the true nature of these relative appearances, the true nature of these illusions, and the true nature of an illusion is that it doesn't exist. It appears, but it's just an illusion. In reality, it doesn't exist. So that's the true nature, that's the ultimate truth, according to the Svatantrika. The ultimate truth is just like space. It's just something that's not there at all. And so that's why in the sutras it also says, emptiness meditation is like space meditation. It's the same thing. That's the ultimate truth. So the Prasangika Madhyamika, which is the second Madhyamika school, they describe the two truths like this. Those imputed by mind are relativities. They are expressed according to the world. And free from complexity, beyond thought and expression, that is the Prasangika explanation.
Mm-hmm. mīn tāng nām tō kā tāk pā tāng jē kūn tō tēn bā rē tēne nē lūk mīn tāng tōk tā lē bē tē nē lūk tō pā tā trā wā tē tēn tā tēn bā
so what this
kūrā sām jū lē nē tē kū kān tā tāng jē tēn bē bā sām tō mē bā jū tō mē bā nām tō kā sām tō mē bā tāng jē jū jū tō mē bā tēn tā nē
The relative truth for the Prasangika is just names and what is imputed by our conceptualizing mind. That's it. So everything that we think about or that we call or that we give a name to is that's the relative truth. And the ultimate truth is completely beyond any type of mental elaboration. It's beyond any type of expression. Anything that we think, anything that we would give, any name that we would give, that's wrong. That's not the ultimate truth. The ultimate truth is completely free from all of that. So given the Prasangika Madhyamika school, they explain things in terms of the two truths because they say that anything that is just a name or just imputed by thought is the relative truth, and what is completely beyond, what is completely inconceivable, what is completely inexpressible, what is completely free from all mental elaborations whatsoever is the ultimate truth.
Tene oma gendong ba deni do so te kunda gyewon kunzo kunda ne yondo ran re ye ki gendong ro.
So the final school is the empty of other Madhyamika school and the Shentong, and what it says is the imagined and the imaginary nature and the other dependent distant nature, awareness knowing itself. That is the empty of other schools description. So if we in this root verse there are described these three natures, the imaginary nature, the other dependent nature, and the perfectly existent nature. So what does this mean? So let's take the example of this flower. Okay? The name flower, the mere imputation of there being a truly existent flower, just the mere name or the object of thought, that is called the imaginary nature. Then the thought that thinks that, the actual workings, the crankings of the mind, the habitual tendencies which produce this thought at the end, flower. So it's like the conceptualizing process, that is the other dependent nature. The actual concept is the imaginary nature. The thought process is the other dependent nature. And then the true nature of this thought process, that is the perfectly existent nature. It is the true nature of this thought process that's going on is nothing other than self-arisen, self-aware, primordial awareness. It's awareness knowing itself. That is the true nature of all of this mental activity. So given the Shentong Madhyamika school, they explain things in terms of the two truths, because the imaginary nature and the other dependent nature are the relative truth, and the perfectly existent nature is the ultimate truth. So, first Rinpoche explained or read and explained some verses from this text on the creation and the completion stages, and then he also explained some verses from the Treasury of Knowledge. Both of these are written by Jamgon Kontro Lodru Taye, and so that creates a very good connection. So now Rinpoche will move on and explain a different verse from this text, and this verse has to do with the different ways we can tame our afflictions or our kleshas, and there are three different ways. One is by giving them up or by getting rid of them, the second is by changing them, and the third is by knowing their true nature. So this verse is can be found at the top of page 34, and it reads, methods of controlling afflictive emotions can be subsumed into three: rejection, which I said is giving up, transformation, and recognition. And so then it describes the first one first. So rejecting these emotions is the ordinary approach of the sutras. Desire is renounced through contemplation on repulsiveness, hatred through contemplation on love, and stupidity through meditation on interdependent relationship or dependent origination, which is what Rinpoche is been talking about a lot the last few nights.
And then you mong pongwa te tumong ga lam doi lam ga re te yang pongso te kar re doi cha ke nyebo madok bete nye zen goma ye dang ke nyebo sambete nye zen goma tumo ke nyebo sin jen de war jongwa gomba so je nyumong dan garde nyebo sin de panguka.
And so this first one is the common way of the, it's called the common explanation of the sutras, of the sutra path, and basically it consists of applying antidotes to the afflictions. So it consists of whatever is the opposite of that affliction, you apply that as the antidote. So in the first case, we have desire. So desire is, in essence, imputing very good qualities onto something which doesn't have those qualities, and so then we want that. And so what we do in the case of when desire comes up is we meditate on the disadvantages or the repulsiveness of that object, whatever it might be. Then in the case of hatred or anger, the opposite of that is love and compassion. And so when we feel hatred, we meditate on love and compassion. And the third one is ignorance or not knowing. And so when we have a feeling of not knowing or ignorance, then what we do is we have to learn. And so we practice the samadhi of studying or becoming familiar with the 12 links of dependent origination, and in fact dependent origination in general. And so by meditating on the opposite of whatever the affliction might be, then by that means we give up the affliction. We literally cast it off.
And
so then the next verse reads, the uncommon approach of mantra is to transform afflictive emotions. When desire arises, you meditate on Amitabha, or a deity such as Heruka in union. The desirous thought is transformed into the deity. The other deluded emotions are treated in the same way. So, basically what this is about is we change the way that the mind is operating. First, we have desire, and then we actually change that desire into something else. We transform it into something else. That's the approach of the mantrayana. And so in the Vajrayana, it says, the last line says, the other deluded emotions are treated in the same way. And what that refers to is that in the Vajrayana, then there are ways of dealing with jealousy, there are ways of dealing with anger, there are ways of dealing with any type of affliction that might arise. And the way of dealing with that is by changing it, by transforming the energy that constitutes it into something else.
Tene dasamba nyumung rangin kipa lamne nyumung rangin kipa chepar lam docha topa lam lam kharvati mohor ke jete pe rangkar yar dedon yemi saja chimbun chal sosol to bhi hi ki jang ka do ne pang do ne jen lang do ne jor do me ba tham che sem jen do Tene machu yana sanje je gongba tele yene kibao.
The exceptional approach, the text continues, the exceptional approach is to recognize the true nature of afflictive emotions. When desirous thoughts arise vividly, looking directly at their essence, they subside in themselves. This is the dawning of the great seal. Bliss and emptiness inseparable. It is also called the pristine wisdom of discernment. There has never been anything to reject, nor to accept, nor to transform. Everything is contained within mind. Know that there is no other intention of Buddha than simply the uncontrived mind itself. So the example here is given of desire, but we should do this with whatever affliction, whatever emotion or thought it is that we're having at the time. And what we do is, even it might be very great, but we look directly into its essence. And the literal word is naked. It means like without anything covering it. We just look directly into its essence and we rest relaxedly in that. That's the procedure. And so what we do is we look into the essence of these thoughts, these concepts. And what we see is that, in fact, they're not something that's truly existent as we think they are. Their true nature is clarity and emptiness inseparable. Their true nature is clear light. Their true nature is beyond any type of mental fabrication, beyond any type of word or expression, beyond anything that we could think about it. Clarity and luminosity, clarity and emptiness, or mere luminosity. And we rest in that. So this has been a brief explanation of the two truths and also of the three ways to deal with or to tame the afflictions. So, are there any questions?
Somewhere later on in the text, it says that the great Kagyu master said that you only had to remember the state of emptiness one time was sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
Okay, yeah, I know where that
is. Sometimes you can remember it, but you forget it very easily. Sometimes you're meditating, and you might remember something. Okay, sometimes it's
Pechagi Jesu Raba. Jesu Jamgon Lodo Taigi Sung. Tongbani. Teng tang bo dren gogi do. Teng tang bo teng chik matok dren gogi mendo. Dene di digi do. Raba. Dene di kong ha kogi mendo. Di dren ha kogi mendo.
Te tang bo tawa ten tene nyambar jaya. Tang bo tawa ten tene nyambar jaya.
So what he says, what it means is basically you just remember the view once, like you don't have to think about it over and over again. So you just remember the view once and then you rest in that state. And so in the meditation of on emptiness, there are many, many different stages. And so starting from the self, meditating on the selflessness of individuals, all the way up. And so, you know, whichever view that you happen to be analyzing at the time, that's what you do.
Yeah. When you talk about emptiness and clarity and luminosity,
mm-hmm.
Is this not only a physical state that you go into, but also one that is completely without words, that you can even say? In other words, you know, it's something that's really incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And that you can be in the present moment, but still be in that state. In other words, you know, for lack of words, you use clarity, emptiness, and luminosity interchangeably.
Mm-hmm.
But does it actually become a physical and mental state that you're just getting to?
Did people hear the question back there?
No.
Not at all.
Sorry.
That's okay. So the way, so I'm going to say I'll ask it and you tell me if it's right. So what she's asking is that there are these terms like clarity and emptiness and luminosity, and these are used to describe the true nature, but is there actually a physical experience, an actual experience that's beyond expression of clarity and emptiness and luminosity?
Yes, but okay.
If it is,
that's
right.
What I'm
saying. Okay. Then, Nelukla, Neluki Ming Daminda Yore, then Saltong Yerme, Ursalwa, Ruba. Then, Yinayang, Saltongi, Nyamnyong, Mune, Yorebes, Saltong, Ursalgi, Nyamnyong, Mune, Yorebes, D, Ursaltong, Saltong, D, Ming, Ming Samre, Yinayang, D, Nyongwa, Mune, Yorebes, Saltongi, Nyongwa, Yore, Mune, Yorebes.
Then, Yindong, the Saki, Dukin, Lola, Saltong, and Mune, Yorebes. Nanjur Pata, Nanjur Min, Sinti Nelo, Monsum to Toba Kapso, Satong Min.
So there is in fact an actual experience of clarity and emptiness or luminosity that is beyond any type of description. And Rinpoche says that in the Dzogchen and Mahamudra traditions, that's said to occur when the yogis and yoginis have a direct realization of emptiness.
In the Malari Pesungur Mama, you don't go to the house of your religion. The Sula was at the thing of Bosom, Malari Pagoma,
So Rinpoche says that in a past visit to Hawaii, he taught some songs by Milarepa on the definitive meaning, and in those songs, Milarepa sung a lot about the experience, the actual experience of this clear light, the actual experience of this clarity and emptiness inseparable. And so because he meditated so much, he actually had this experience and then he talked about it.
Then I mean, the name Saja Chimbilola, they don't get your money in the middle of the day. They don't get the top one.
And also in the Mahamudra, it's said that the true nature is bliss and emptiness inseparable, and that is an actual experience of the realized yogis. This experience, when they actually realize the true nature, then they experience bliss and emptiness inseparable. Bliss that doesn't have any, that can't be described at all. It's completely intermixed with emptiness. And so Milarepa said that in one song he sang of the 18 different types of yogic happiness, and he said that, or yogic bliss, and he said that when suffering arises, I'm happy.
The nature of that,
yeah. I had a question about the three ways to give up desire. Three ways. Could Rinpoche give a concrete example, like if I wanted to stop drinking coffee? Just an example of how you use those three ways.
Like when the desire for coffee arises,
yeah,
what you would do? Okay.
Then, Yunmong Gi Du Tapsum Ikola. Tene perna coffee. America give me coffee gabadu raba. Tene coffee la dupa had shukchenbo shore kapsu. Tene di tapsum kandes jargido.
Tapsum de coffee. Coffee
pang na
copy la cabo y el nando que ni en botín gata cobrando
la sami
copy de yen y sambe tungu y el de chanti chapati y el de gata sambe copy de chun sambe
la sami
de cada cadi
de tap tango
de tap tango de la copy pono sambe
so so Rinpoche says with the first method, since you have this desire for coffee, you think it's something good. So then what you would do is you would think about the negative effects of coffee, like it makes you can't sleep and it's you get nervous, you know, you get yeah you get hot, and so like you just it just has all these bad effects. It's not good for your health. And so you would think about the disadvantages of drinking coffee, and by that you would negate your desire for the coffee.
Then the jewel lamp is dirty table on the jewel a jewel. Amneta jewel. Sanje tan sanju samba tamji the single lamp jewel a jewel. Coffee lamp. Then the yang rang yedam gomi na yedam di kengko gomi toka lebe jen to coffee lepo jewel jewel sam sam.
Lasa.
Amneta jewel a jewel.
Lasa.
The jewel.
In and di tapla tene tene dutsi tungi duge
re re dutsi jun
dutsi jun ne tungi duge lasa so in the lasa so in the Vajrayana what you do is you imagine that the coffee is transformed into nectar, which is means like its appearance and emptiness inseparable. And you can imagine that whatever deity is that you might be meditating on at the time sends out like all of these light rays, and then the coffee is transformed into this inseparable, this nectar of inseparable liquid and emptiness, and that the mandala is all around you with all these wonderful lights, and then you drink the coffee. Actually, that's wrong. That's wrong. You don't drink the coffee, you drink the nectar. You drink the nectar of liquid and emptiness, because it's not coffee anymore. It's liquid and emptiness together. So you just drink that.
Coffee jarangin ki patan, coffee thondo jen namdo garangin ki gore, coffee thondo jen namdo garangin ki gore.
Last one. So,
coffee thondo namdo garangin.
Last one.
Coffee la gawa, coffee thondo jen namdo yarawa, sobo te rangin gomba,
rangin
ki patan. Deyan tambo coffee jarangin ki, coffee tongba ni jarangin ki.
Last one.
Coffee thondo jen namdo garangin ki.
Last
one. Yarawa?
Last one.
Dina? Coffee, drinking, Nandong Yenid, Coping Tondo, the Namdo, the Satong Yenid, Philip Satong Dang, your Sat Nandong Dang, Kipa Satong and Namigan.
Lasa. So, in the third method, what you would do is when you have this desire for coffee come up, then you look into the essence of that thought. You look into the essence of the thought and of the coffee, and you know that they're just appearance and that the coffee is just appearance and emptiness inseparable, and that your thought is just clarity and emptiness inseparable. And so when you realize that, then you just rest in the essence of that thought. So, last night and the night before, Rinpoche explained to us the Heart Sutra. And so, what he says we should do is, when something like that comes up, the way that we would first determine that the coffee is truly empty and the desire for the coffee is truly empty is by connecting it up with those four different reasons for emptiness, that it doesn't have any characteristics, it doesn't have any origin, it doesn't have any cessation, it's not pure or impure, and it doesn't increase or decrease. And so those are by doing that, you can understand why it is that the coffee is actually empty.
nūmūpa tōngā kāndē tīnā tōngā rāngīng hīpa gōnyī tōngā rāngīng hīpa tā tāwā rē tōngā rāngīng hīta ñabar jāna tēnē gōmā rē gōmā rē tēnē tōngā rāngdō
tōngā. So in the Vajrayana, what we do is we look into the essence of these thoughts and we just rest very naturally in that essence. We look into the essence of our desire and we rest naturally in that essence, and then the desire is self-liberated. Other questions?
When to?
The term clarity in a phenomenology, I have some sense of what that means in English, but I have no idea what the means of course. That is where it's actually, could you explain?
Like explain a little bit more about clarity and emptiness and luminosity.
I'm using the word clarity to explain.
Right, okay. Huh?
And unimpedance while you're at it.
Dene, salwa tang tongba tang tang ursa dene kogi tsik ha kogi do raba inian dun karadas
se ha kona don gomgo.
He says that if you know what the word is, then you have to meditate on the meaning.
Well, I know what the word means in English, but I don't know what they mean. What does that mean? If they say that word, they say it best.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
You know, then break down the syllables so that like she, they,
then it's salwa perke la salwa karedes salwa karedes
sarva tela danda.
So there's two kinds of clarity, Rinpoche says. And the first kind is the outer clarity of the light of the sun, or just of a lamp. And then there's the inner clarity, which is the inner clarity of the mind. And that means that the mind's nature is beyond any color. It's not a color and it doesn't have a shape. Its nature, it's by nature clear. So it's said that the mind is in its nature clarity and emptiness inseparable. And so emptiness is an explanation given from the perspective of negation. Like saying it's not this, it's not that, it's not something else. It's in fact empty. And then clarity is an explanation given from the perspective of affirmation. It is clear. It is luminous. It is bright. So then what this tells us is to really understand what it means, we have to meditate, Rinpoche says. There's no other way.
Then I said, ตัจจะตังจะโยวะติสิญญะญะญะเตนะมณีปะตุงปะยานะสัจจะเยปะติจะนะวะสัจจะทะคะโนดีดียันจะสะระเตนะคิรัตติเตนะมณีปะเรคิรัตติตัจเจตังนะมณีเปตุงปะนิเรเรเตนะมาเจปะรามัตติยานะสัจจะตัลสังมาเจปะตัจเจมาตังปะลาสะ
So, Rinpoche says that if we apply this to our meditation, what we have to do is first we have to look into what is the true nature of our mind. And we have to look and see if we can see any color or any shape or anything that we can actually find. And that not finding anything with our highest intelligence, with our prajna, that is the emptiness. And then resting in that when we're not analyzing, that is the clarity. Like that.
Yeah, thank you.
Then
I'd just like to check and see if I have the correct understanding of making use of feeling places. And it seems to me that it's with the emotions such as anger, it's not so easy, like with desire, it's much simpler to look at desire and look right into it.
Mm-hmm.
But anger is a kind of emotion that tends to take one over out of a habit that's very strong.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems to me that there's a way to get to it through using the transformation process. I want to check if this is correct. Like by using a wrathful deity like Dorje Drolo and feeling one instantly become this deity with this strength and the power and use the anger to do the trom and transform everything. And then through that transformation process and through using that, get to the point where you can see that see through it.
Mm-hmm. So you wanna ask if that's okay. Did people hear that question? Okay. Can it Morangi tap, tene Morangi di tap di Rinpoche la tene Rinpoche di yapudu yapumindu sunana. Tene Morang la duchak gi sharna, tene duchak gi ngowa la ta le labudu. Yineyang shedang gi sharna, tene shedang shukchen budu. Tene ngō la ta tūpki mindu, kale ka bodu, shūk chen bodu. Tene kontrola shāna, kontrola shāna, tene shūk chen bodu, reba, shūk chen bodu. Tene kontrol sharwe kapso, tene yidam morangi hidam la gyorgi do. Rangi gyurgi do and a Dorje Drolo. Tene Morangi nga Dorje Drolo yi. Tene kanga gyurgi do. Raba. Tene pe Morangi shuk chenbo do. Samgi do. Raba. Tene di kapsu control gi ngola ta le labo do. Tene di digi do. So Rinpoche says it's exactly like that. That's very good.
So
Rinpoche says that's good. He says that he applies the explanation of the three methods to anger, and if you applied the first method, then when anger came up, you would meditate on loving kindness and compassion. And in the second method, you would do exactly as you explained, by transforming yourself into the wrathful aspect of the deity, and the whole, you know, mandala appears, or whatever your visualization might be. And then after doing that a little bit, then you look into the essence of that anger and see what it actually is. So that's a combination of the second and the third method. So he says that's very good.
For me, it seems like, you know, she's been in the Dharma for a while, you know, we've heard about Mahamudra and Dzogchen, like, oh, well, that's what I want to do, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, I want to be one of those guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not so easy to just get there.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like you need to do a process.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Tene, Murangi, Chirpa yun rinpoche, right? Nangpa yun rinpoche. Tene, Chakya chenpo tang, Dzogchen giko la, Mangpo nyen song, right? Tene, Murangi sama tang, nga ngane, Dzogchen drupapo gugidus, right? Tang Chakchen drupapo gugidus, di pe yabodu, yinayang kalikabodu, right? Tene, tangpo tambo gyurwe tab drupna tene chichina le labodu.
Yeah, so he says just do exactly what you've been doing and apply first the method of transformation and then the method of looking into the essence.
Is it harmful if you have no experience, if you have very little experience with the first two methods, is it harmful to focus your meditation mm-hmm. on using the third method, even mm-hmm. though you really have no experience with, or little experience with using transformation, or
giving up rejection?
Or giving up.
Right.
Is it harmful to this?
Okay. Tene, top. Tab ni tene nyamlen nyung nyung ma tong mendo. Tab tang nipa, tambo tang nipa, diba? Tene di nyamlen mambo mendo, nyung nyung ma tong mendo.
Mambo ito.
Tene di tene tab sumba la jarna tene nyeka chenbo duge. So first thing Rinpoche says was actually do have experience with the first two methods. That's what he said. And then the second thing he said though is that that you don't have to worry, that you should just apply that method. There's no danger in it, in using the third method. Did everybody hear the question? Okay.
Jorba tela yin tab mambo re pe nai gedang jo na thobi ching ko la do ji photo la so dang di ni ketu la so so la thobi ching ko sa ha jang mambo yin ba ten da wo gom na di ni mambo yin ba
sechor mambo yin ba la di re yin yang kongi rangin nyam len mambo men do rangin nyam len mambo
te ye re thobo je gom na
re
gedang jo de thobo gom na do ji to lo na wo che gom na la che gra wa Mambo Mundo, then they do the Papa Dawota. Then a lack I get told not for Haja Mambu, you go to Sam Mambu, the little Nick and Gong to the
Mambu Yung. Mambo Yungere, Yin and Kung di Tab di Hakogi Mendo, about Lok Jung Chemason, then a Hakogi Mendo, Tab Nipa.
Tab Nipa did anything, Naran Yadamti Yamisi, one so to me.
So Rinpoche says actually it's not too difficult to apply the second method, and he said there are many different deities, wrathful looking deities, and you can just pick from amongst them, you know, ones that you like. And then I said, well, I said, well, what if you haven't like studied it or you don't really know what to do? And he said, it's not that difficult. You just imagine yourself as this deity and you just like develop a lot of what's called the pride of the deity, where you say, I am this, you know, wrathful deity, you know, and you like, and you develop this, you develop this type of pride of the deity, and that's it. I mean, that's transforming your anger into this pride of the deity. And so also you can do this with Vajrapani or whatever, you know, wrathful deity you might want to do. Yeah.